I'm Chief Cheryl Victorian. This is Waco PD on the beat. Whether it's crime or just getting to know the Waco Police Department, we're here to talk about things that matter most to you.
Hello, Waco, and welcome to Waco PD on the Beat. I'm Sierra Shipley, the Public Information Officer for the Waco Police Department. And this month, the month of October, is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So we have the Family Abuse Center here to talk about domestic violence, what that looks like, and how they're helping within our community, and how also the police department kind of plays into that as well. So we have Whitney Thomas and Samantha Dietzler here with the Family Abuse Center. And I'll let you guys introduce yourselves and kind of your role at the FAC.
Okay. I'm Whitney Thomas. I'm the executive director. I've been with FAC for 9.5 years at this point. So I was hired as director of finance and then got promoted to associate director. And then when our previous director left, I applied for the job and got it. So, and I've been in that role since June of last year.
Okay. Very nice. And you, Samantha?
I am the director of development. I got hired in December of 2020, which was my last semester of college, but I do all things fundraising and helping with raising awareness on different campaigns. So like grants, and then like we just had our big fundraiser, Dancing with the Waco Stars. Mm-hmm. So I was heavily involved in that.
Yeah, Dancing with the Waco Stars was fun, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was so cool to see the different Waco Stars dance with those professionals. That was awesome. So let's first talk about kind of what the FAC is. What is the resource here for Waco and McLennan County?
So we're a domestic violence service provider. We provide an emergency shelter. We have legal services. We do not represent our clients in court, but we do help them with walking through that system. We do case management with residential and non-residential clients. We have a counseling department. We have a HOPES program, which is early childhood development, housing programs. So all these programs help our clients become independent with whatever that means for them. And there's no charge for any of our services. The only criteria is that you're a victim of domestic violence.
Absolutely. How long has the FAC been here in Waco? Do you guys know?
We have been incorporated since 1979, and we started on in a little bitty house downtown. The house isn't even there anymore, and then we've moved a couple locations. So,
right, I'm sure it's grown since that time.
Exponentially. Yeah, we have 64 beds right now.
Wow.
So, yes.
Wow. Okay. And so, like I said, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, but of course, you guys are putting out programs and different things all year long. It's not just a month for you guys. Right. So what does that look like at the FAC? How are you guys continuing to help throughout the year?
Yes. So there's things we do externally and then internally. So a lot this month right now, we just did our fundraiser and then we're having Day of Remembrance, which remembers the lives lost the previous year in Texas due to domestic violence. So on Thursday, actually, we're doing that ceremony near the Texas Rangers Hall along the Riverwalk. And it's also Go Purple Day. So today for everyone to wear purple to spread awareness. So we do various campaigns like that. We're going to work on a pet shelter campaign. And that's just also bringing awareness to different boundaries and barriers that might prevent someone from leaving their situation. We also do teen dating violence awareness in February. So different campaigns like that to kind of highlight different factors into domestic violence. And we do a lot of community outreach as well and presentations, but also internally we've started this group for our clients focused on domestic violence prevention. And so they're remembering the signs because a lot of the things that we focus on when they're in shelter is their immediate needs. And so sometimes our case managers don't have time to sit down and go through all the things before they go back into the world and potentially end up in situations like that again, because our statistic is typically it takes about someone 7 times to finally leave or often end up dead, and that's why we have our report. So we really want to focus on making sure that when our clients go back into the world, they're able to recognize those signs before potentially entering in a situation like that. So those are kind of some things we do internally also in terms of awareness.
Right. Is there a time of year where you see that it gets – that you guys are more busy or more clients come in and asking for help, or is it kind of just like an all year, it's happening all the time, random type situations?
I would say in the wintertime, in summer when life gets stressful. So around holidays, back to school, or even the kids are home from school, there's a lot of tension that builds up within the home. And so especially around Christmas, I think is probably our highest number of clients during that time. And that's just the nature of the beast, unfortunately. And so, but we're able to accommodate that. And then sometimes it can be so random. Like we had a huge spike back in May. I mean, we had almost 50 clients in shelter. I mean, the phone's ringing off the hook. So it really, there are seasons, but it can really happen anytime.
Right, right. There's not really like a reason for it. Maybe like you said, stressful times of the year, but other than that,
right,
there's not really a reason. Okay. And of course, I know we talk about domestic violence, and I think a lot of times people think of women as the victim, but talk about how anyone can be a victim of domestic violence.
Yeah, anybody can be a victim, a mom, a dad, an aunt, an uncle. So for us, we define domestic violence as violence that can be emotional, mental, any sort of abuse that is affecting your well-being between two members, whether it's in sort of a relationship. You couldn't say your coworker by any means because you don't live in the same place, but if you're in an intimate relationship or you live in the same household, it can really just be anybody.
Right. And you said, Samantha, it usually takes someone 7 times to experience domestic violence before actually walking away or something worse to happen. And how crazy is that? I didn't know that information. So I know you guys knew that information, but how insane is it to know that 7 times for something to happen? That's a big number. How sad is it?
Yeah, it's a lot. We see repeat clients come through a lot. And, you know, of course, from us on the outside situation where we have this like rationale, we can clearly see what's wrong or right. You know, really, we're just here to support those clients and what they need to hopefully get to that point, and just make sure they're able to, you know, go back to like an independent, free life. But it can be challenging when you're seeing your clients come through, and then maybe, you know, sometimes it's been like not as bad as a situation or it's getting worse. But yeah, we're really just here to make sure that we can give those supportive services to everyone, and hopefully get them set up for success, you know, the next time around.
Yeah. And what have you guys seen as to how important that support is? How important has your guys' work been for these people?
I think it's very significant. Of course, it's our passion to help any victim, but they have to want the help just like anything else. And so sometimes that can be a struggle, but if they are ready, because they have to be ready in order to walk away and walk away for good. I mean, we've seen people turn their lives around. I mean, just completely. They've gone on to complete college, or and they've purchased homes, they've purchased cars, they've got a full-time job, because sometimes they don't even have a job. So if that's what success is for them, is to be able to have a job and have their own income, they're able to do that through using our services and our support. But we've seen a lot of people come through and really be successful on their own terms.
Right. How big is your guys' staff for the work that you do?
We have about 30 employees, okay. Some part-time, but a lot of us are full-time and admin and direct service. But I think we all interact with clients at one time or another, whether it's getting the kids off of the bus or answering the phones or helping with dinner sometimes.
So. It's very collaborative. Everyone kind of helps in where they can.
Yeah.
Even if it isn't like I'm admin, but if someone in direct staff needs help, like I go and help that and vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really important. How would you say that the police department, do you guys work, I mean, hand in hand with the police department, of course, because our officers are dealing with maybe those victims on the street if 911 or something like that, yes, is called. So how often do you guys work with the police department in that sense?
It's pretty frequent. They will call us if a client on scene or a victim on scene wants services right there, or is ready to leave and needs somewhere to go. They will call us directly and we'll work the transportation out with the officers. We work with victim services quite a bit, and because sometimes a victim is in a situation, but yet they're not ready to leave. And so they may work with victim services to safety plan with them, get them connected to us. And so it may take a little bit for them to get to us. But we can also serve them even if they don't come to shelter. But collaborating with Waco PD has been a huge step in for us and Waco PD, because we all work for the victim.
Right.
So we want to make victim services' job easier, relieve some of the work that we can do so that they can focus on other types of cases that they may not have the time to focus on. And that's what we're here for, is to provide those same services. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's hard, too. We all know that it's hard for those victims to come forward and ask for help in the very beginning. So whether that they come, and then it's one more step is to who do they go for to help? Are they going to call the police in an incident, or are they going to call you if they're, you know, they feel a little bit more comfortable or safe to reach out? How often do you guys see, you know, people come forward and say, yeah, it's been happening for a while? It's never those, like, first-time victims.
I don't have a statistic for that, but I would say probably 85% of people who at that point reach out to us, it's been ongoing.
Right.
And maybe they just didn't recognize it until it got worse, like Samantha had mentioned earlier. But it's tricky because, like you said, they don't know sometimes who to call. They don't know that we exist. So we want everybody to know that we exist so they can reach out to us, whether they want to reach out to the police or not. That's their own choice.
Sure, sure. And how important is it to know that when they do reach out, you know, that they feel safe? Because I think a lot of times people fear for retaliation. So yes. How do you help in comforting those people for that?
Our facility is set up. We're a confidential location. We have all sorts of security measures on our building. Also, internally, like, our systems don't go anywhere. So nobody is identified when we do state reporting by their name, by their birthday, by anything. It is just a number. Okay. So all of their information stays internal. It doesn't get shared. Our facility is safe. Mm-hmm. We all work. We compare it to HIPAA sometimes, but we aren't supposed to talk about another client to another agency or another person.
Oh,
so
wow. Okay.
We don't disclose anything about a victim unless there is a release of information. So
yeah. Right.
And even if they're not ready to leave, and if they call our hotline, because that's typically the first step, to kind of see what services will best fit them, we always safety plan with people too. So if they're not ready to leave, at least they have a plan in place if, you know, the issue increases and they do need to leave quickly.
Okay, wow, that's really interesting, especially, and I'm sure those victims that come in, they definitely feel reassured to know that they are, it's that number that maybe gets shared, but it's not anything that goes beyond that.
Right, and it's really, we just report to the state what services we're providing. We don't disclose any details. Mm-hmm. It's just what services are we providing as an agency to victims across the state.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about the state, I know you have some numbers as far as domestic violence across the state of Texas. So what does that look like in the state?
So we are working with Texas Council on Family Violence, which most shelters in Texas work with them. And so they compile all the data from the previous years to let us know how many people lost their lives to domestic violence. And so in 2021, 204 Texans were killed by an intimate partner. Again, that's not like a brother or sister or not living under the same household. That's just an intimate relationship. So out of all the Texans, that's 204. That's less than 2020, which is good, but it's still the third highest number ever since they've been tracking these numbers.
Okay. So the third highest for our state.
Yes,
since they've been tracking.
Yes.
Okay.
The other thing to note is that they also count bystanders in this, and so there was 22 family, friends, or bystanders killed in the act of the perpetrator committing.
Right. And so I know that when the pandemic started, a lot of people were nervous and scared for those victims because everyone was locked at home, and so they weren't able to maybe go out and reach out for help. And this was for the victims of domestic violence. This was for kids as well, because they weren't able to go to school and be in front of those mandatory reporters and things like that. Was that a fear that you guys had when the pandemic started, or how did you guys work around that to make sure your services were still being given during this time?
I have to say we were sort of freaked out on how are we going to handle this, because not only do we know that people are going to be in danger, but how are we going to serve them with this virus that's going around that we don't even know how to deal with ourselves? So what we ended up doing was we took our occupancy in half. And so the way our shelter set up, you share a bathroom with another family. So we just made it where you couldn't share a bathroom. But we didn't stop services. And so we did what we could. We went and did all of our counseling, all of our, any kind of meeting we could do virtually, we did virtually. And so that helped a lot. I think the only numbers we really saw decrease during that time was the in shelter. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the following year, we had an ice storm.
Yes.
Which also impacted. So we were shut down. Yeah. During that time, we couldn't serve anybody in shelter. But again, we had already had all the systems in place to do virtual services, and so we just continued with those processes.
Right. How has it been as those cases have decreased? You know, how has it been getting back to kind of the normal ways of being able to serve and let those families in and provide that comfort?
Probably right before I started in June of last year, we decided that we wouldn't put a limit on our occupancy. Other than, you know, obviously we have so many beds, but we weren't going to cut anything in half anymore. Because the vaccine was out, people were becoming more comfortable. And so we felt okay with opening up our doors completely. And so what we did is we ended up just the beginning of this year producing a commercial to let people know, hey, we're still here.
Yeah.
Even through the pandemic and ice storm and anything else, we're still here serving people. If you need help, reach out.
Sure, sure. And it seems like a silly question, but if someone needed to reach out, we ask them all that, you know, we tell them all the time, just reach out, just, you know, give us a call. But it's so hard to do that. So how do you guys help those people who are afraid to pick up that phone? Or what would you say to them?
It is hard because, one, they're embarrassed. Two, they may be scared. They don't know what it's going to be like. But is it scary to be in that situation where you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow? Or is it scary to be in a shelter that you don't know the people in the room next to you, but yet it's a safe place? Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds kind of harsh. But, I mean, you have to choose what is best for you. But even if they want to call, and it's just talking through, again, like safety planning and just talking with them to let them know that what their situation is not okay. It is not normal. That doesn't mean they have to come to shelter. That doesn't mean they have to receive services. It is literally even just being a listening ear for somebody maybe four or five times before they actually decide to leave. But there is help. And so I think people don't know that there's help. And if they're scared, talk to a friend, talk to a neighbor that you can trust, and maybe they can encourage you to make the call. I think a lot of times people want to make the call because they know it doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Something's off in this relationship, but they don't know how to get there. And so just having that trusted friend that you can talk to also can help.
We have a chat line now on our website as well. So if someone isn't really ready to make a phone call, because I know a phone call could feel more like official and everything, they're still able to go through and talk through the same things, safety plan. We can run them through our services and everything.
Okay. So. Okay. And what's that website?
Familyabusecenter.org.
Okay. Easy enough. Yeah. And so as far as if they wanted to, let's say that person just wanted to call and talk. They just needed someone to listen to them or just give them a little bit of advice. Whether that be a chat line or a phone call, is that information, do they have to give personal information to receive that advice, or how much do they have to give to for you guys to help?
For a hotline call, even the chat, we don't even ask your name or anything. It's not until you make do we actually speak to you on the phone, that we ask your name. And really that's it. Your name and where you're calling from is really the only personal information that we collect. And that's just so we can track, have they called before? You know, we can sort of see internally, okay, we've done these three things with this person. Maybe let's try this. But yeah, it's not too much information upon right. the initial call.
Right. Now, Whitney, I know you said you didn't have like an exact number, but how many individuals or families do you guys help? Does the FAC help each year?
Over the last 3 years, remember, this is dated since October 1st, 2019. So before COVID into now, we've served 997 adults and 497 kids in shelter. Mm-hmm. I think on average, we serve about 400, 500 people in shelter. Like right now, we have over 50 people mm-hmm. in shelter. Mm-hmm. But total outreach, on top of those other numbers, we serve 703 outreach clients and 200 children.
Wow. And now I'm sure to someone listening, that sounds like a lot of people, but I'm sure to you guys, that's just a fraction of the people that need help out there, right?
Absolutely. I've heard Waco PD talk about the number of family violence calls that they get, and it's like an astronomical number to us. It's like over 2,000 calls a year, and it's like, wow. Those are just the people that are reporting to police. Those aren't even the people that want the help, that don't want to call the police.
Right.
And those are, it's an astronomical number that actually need the help or want the help, but they don't know how to reach out. They're too scared to reach out. So even the 2,000 people that call Waco PD, that's, again, just a fraction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so hard with something like this because we really don't know how many people out there need your help until right. they reach out and ask for that help. And I think it's really interesting, too, is as we've gone through the years, which is a good thing, yes, but also sad to see how many people are experiencing this. But I think that it's becoming more common for people mm-hmm. to report this situation, which, like I said, is a good thing. But it's so sad to see the numbers grow, right? I'm trying to say, like, it's sad to see the numbers grow, but also it's good in a sense because it means people are reaching out, right?
Yeah, we feel the same way. Like, whenever we have a full shelter, like, we're sad because that means so many people are in this situation, but also it's a good thing because we know we're able to provide these services to these people, and hopefully then they're able to start their independent free life. Yeah, I understand, definitely.
Right. Two sides of the coin, exactly. And how would you tell someone, maybe they know someone who might be experiencing domestic violence, they might not know how to help that person, or they want to help that person, they just don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Or what are some signs that someone on the outside can look for?
I think it's hard to see, and Sam, chime in whenever, but I think it's hard to see a lot of times from the outside into that kind of relationship, because usually the abuser is very secretive. Everything's behind closed doors. Let's put on this good front that we have a great relationship. So things may seem picture perfect mm-hmm. from the outside. But let's say it's not, and you're a friend who you see things happening, or you hear things happening, or you catch maybe a few red flags with him being more controlling, or I don't want to, maybe controlling, demanding. It's all a power and control thing, but you're starting to see things happen or hear things happen. You can just ask, hey, is everything okay? You don't want to pry too much because then the victim may not even want to open up. But just letting them know, hey, I'm here if you want to talk about anything, you know. You don't want to just be so direct like you would maybe in other situations, because he may hear it, may see it, may suspect something, and then again, then the abuse just gets worse.
Mm-hmm. We talk about, like, language, too, whenever we're doing community outreach presentations. Like, it's not, why didn't you leave, but, like, what was preventing you from leaving? Because, you know, there's so many barriers into someone leaving that you don't want – it to feel like you're kind of blaming them for just not seeing it and just upright and leaving. Because sure. Most of the times that's not the case. They can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say, too, that when a victim decides that they're going to leave, that is the most dangerous time for something worse to happen. We don't know a lot of the details into some of these deaths, but a lot of the time it's the victim was trying to leave the situation, abuser didn't want them to leave, and then it escalated to the point of death or somebody being severely hurt.
Right, right. And I know, I can't remember who said it in the beginning, but one of you guys said that they might not know they're in a situation of domestic mm-hmm. violence. So what, I mean, that someone who might not have experienced domestic violence, like how do you not know that you're in that situation? Or what are some things that that victim can look out for to say, hey, this isn't right and I need to get help or leave?
Yeah, a lot of it will kind of come down to like, you know, exerting control, whether that's finances or maybe even commenting about like what they're wearing or their appearance. A lot of it can just be like really condescending talk, or like we talk about the cycle on how you'll have like love bombing at first, and so they're being really nice, they're complimenting you, and then like an outburst happens, and then like the incident of abuse, and then it just continues in a cycle until the complimenting part is just gone. But it can come down to a lot of different things. We really try to educate people on how it's not just physical abuse. So you have sexual coercion, the financial abuse. Sometimes even it appears in just like stalking or also spiritual and religious abuse and using that as control. Or if you're in like a married relationship, right, especially when it comes down to like religious principles, you know, talking about how the wife is supposed to submit to the husband. So a lot of the times it just seems like maybe this is the norm or you've been taught one way, and once you're in it, it's too late. And then also denial, you know, no one wants to be like, oh, it's happening to me. Mm-hmm. Like who would have thought? So it's kind of really hard to recognize those when you're in a relationship. And if you are emotionally involved, you know, that's going to cloud your judgment. But if it's a continual repetition of being berated and being put down, that's typically the start of it. So trying to be conscious of that and how someone is treating you.
Yeah. So you mentioned the website for people to reach out to if they need to, but what are some other ways that people can reach out, and what's the phone number, what's the address of the FAC, and all that information?
So we can't give you the address because it is confidential.
It's confidential, okay.
Yes. But they can call our local number, which is 254-772-8999. We also have a hotline number. It all rings to the same phone. The chat line through our website. They can reach out to us through Victim Services, or a referral through another agency as well.
Okay, very good. And then something I almost forgot about, but the bilingual position.
Yes.
Can we talk about, I know I posted about it on our Waco PD page because it's kind of a position that's going to help our police department and also the FAC. So talk a little bit more about that position and how someone can apply.
So they can apply on our website directly at familyabusecenter.org and go to the career tab.
Job opportunities.
And then the information's there. They can email Scott Heaton, who supervises that position. But they will office out of Waco PD in the same office as Victim Services. And they won't go out on scene or anything. But again, like I said, it's to partner with Victim Services to relieve some of that work, that whether it's crime victims, compensation, helping with protective orders, the safety planning aspect of things, and then even more so, the legal advocacy side of things. So they may have a court date coming up and they don't want to go by themselves. They don't have anybody else that can go sit with them. They don't want anybody else to go sit with them. And so our legal advocate can go with them and just be that support system in that moment with them. We are paid to do that and you guys are paid to do that. But we want to relieve some of that work so that Victim Services can focus on the other types of cases, because we know that, again, there's over 2,000 calls of family violence.
Right,
we just want to make sure that we're able to touch as many people as need it.
Yeah.
And so if you're a victim and you're talking to one of the victim services, whether it's a volunteer or actual victim services, you can tell them, yes, I do want somebody from Family Abuse Center to reach out to me, and we can make that call directly. We can't just cold call anybody, so we have to have some sort of referral. And so that's another way, is that if you let victim services know, hey, yes, I want somebody to reach out to me, then we can make that call.
Right, right. And again, that's the it's a full-time position, the bilingual legal advocate. And you said that resumes and cover letters can be sent to Scott Heaton, who's the director of legal services, and I had to pull this up because I did not remember it. But his email to send that resume and cover letter to is going to be scott.heaton@familyabusecenter.org. Yes. And Heaton is spelled H-E-A-T-O-N.
Yes.
So that is very cool. I like when we get to partner with other organizations and entities within the community, because like you said, we're all working for the victim. We all want to help create this better and safe place for our community. So I think it's awesome when we get to partner with things like this to just spread that awareness and help.
Absolutely.
But before we round it out here, is there anything else that you guys think you want to talk about, touch on? Anything coming up for the Family Abuse Center that people should know about?
We do have Day of Remembrance on. I don't know when this goes out, but it is this Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Texas Rangers Hall of Fame, and then also to wear purple on that day.
Is there any, like, volunteer opportunities with the FAC or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. On our website, I believe it's on the same tab as career opportunities. If not, it's one over, but we do have a tab for volunteer opportunities. And on that, on our website, is just a list of the things that we have. A lot of the times it's children's service, helping organize, maybe helping serve meals, occasionally landscaping projects. But that whole application is on our website, and they can go fill that out there.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you both, Whitney and Samantha, for joining us here on Waco PD on the Beat. We appreciate you, and anytime something comes up, please reach out to us, and we'll get you back on the podcast to talk about it.
Definitely.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. And thank you guys for listening. We appreciate you. I'm Sierra Shipley, the Public Information Officer with the Waco Police Department. Have a good one.
Waco PD on the Beat. The heartbeat serving